7th chapter and read what is said, and we'll begin there. So, but King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites, from the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, "You shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods." Solomon clung to these in love. And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And his wives turned his heart away his heart. For it was so, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites, and Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not fully follow the Lord, as did his father. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh and the abomination of Moab on a hill that is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the people of Ammon. And he did likewise for all his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. And so the Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned from the Lord God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods. But he did not keep what the Lord had commanded. Therefore the Lord said to Solomon, "Because you have done this and have not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom away from you and give it to your servant. Nevertheless, I will not do it in your days for the sake of your father David. I will tear it out of the hand of your son. However, I will not tear away the whole kingdom. I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David, and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen." Now, it doesn't get any plainer about what God thinks about Solomon. And so we have that, but I have this point. I want to make a point. Have you ever considered the smartest guy in the room and then found him lacking? Do we know who the smartest guy in the room is? Okay, that's one thing, okay? But if we had an idea about who is the smartest guy in the room, have you ever looked at him, scrutinized him, and then realized, you know, he's not quite as good as I thought? Well, if I take that, Solomon becomes the perfect example. He doesn't just have some of the good stuff. He's been given a double portion by God. And so he has these additional gifts given that make him even better. So in 1 Kings 3, I want to go back there and see what Solomon said or did at the beginning. And let's see what God did for him. It says, "And Solomon said, 'You have shown great mercy to your servant David my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness of him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am a little child. I do not know how to go in or go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?'" The speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Then God said to him, "Because you have asked this thing and have not asked for a long life for yourself, nor asked for riches for yourself, nor have asked for a life, the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, behold, I have done according to your word. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you, and I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be anyone like you among the kings all your days. So if you walk in my ways and keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days." And so here he is as a young man, a boy even, that recognizes that power and might and direction come from God. And so he asked for the thing, give me wisdom and understanding. That's what I need. And so God is thrilled with the fact that he would say such a thing. He said it eloquently. He did it well. He gives him that, and I'm going to give you more than that. And so he gives him extra that no one will be like Solomon. So, asking for wisdom rather than gain, he gets riches, wisdom, and honor, and also a longer life if you'll keep my way. But Solomon was led away by his wives. So, taking the two passages and starting to make some reconciliation between the two, Solomon was prohibited by God from marrying foreign wives. Now here's where the rub is right from the beginning, is that he does the thing that God said don't do. Now I don't really understand all of this, but I do understand that he knows what he was about, or at least he started that way. But he directly defies God on what he's doing when he does this. And so it says that he loved those women and that he would cling to them, that they were his love, okay? And I'm not real sure how you do that. I really don't. I don't understand how you love 1,000 women. I'm afraid. I just tell you. But the sense of the excess of the number says something in and of itself. There's either something insecure about him, there's something that's wrong here to seek this, what he is after. And so the thought has always been that Solomon used these women to make alliances in the kingdom. And I think that makes some sense. Okay, if I go over and I take the daughter of another king and make her my wife, that we have an alliance that is strong and that can be counted on, and all those kinds of good things that might work that way. But then I start counting the numbers. Are there 1,000 kingdoms around Israel? Well, I kind of looked at the map and started looking around, and I don't see anywhere close to 1,000. As a matter of fact, you can go double that, triple that, quadruple that. You can get on out there a ways, and there still aren't 1,000 women out there that he needs for alliance. And so that's not. Maybe some of it in some cases, but that's not the reason. And so, he took women that were not about alliances, but were about what he wants. It might be thought that he loves exotic women, because he took from a place where he wasn't supposed to take them. He took those that believe in foreign gods, that probably dressed in exotic ways, that don't dress like we do, don't act like we do, or have strange thinking. And that maybe that enticed his mind as well, you see. Something along those lines, I don't know. But I know this, that he had been warned by God, don't do this, and yet he did it. And so, there's a point. We are warned, do not go to excess. I see, we have lots of folks that go to excess in our country. We take drugs, and we take drugs for medicinal reasons, and that's okay. And then there's people who I like the feeling of drugs, and so I want to take them, and I'm going to do that recreationally. I'm going to take drugs for just a little bit so that I can feel good. And I like that high that it gives me. I like the feeling that it gives me until it owns you. Don't go to excess. There are those that are not satisfied having their own wife, that they think they need approval by more than that, and they go to excess. There are those that are avoiding whatever the good reason that you have to do an excess or to go to excess. I'm telling you, you shouldn't be doing that. I'll take it down to even the simple things like video games. There are people who play video games and play them for hour upon hour upon hour because they'd rather play in their imaginary world than live in their real one. And I want us to see and hear That's not the place for satisfaction, you see. If you don't like your life, make your life where you do. That's the point, is to face your fears and face the things that trouble you and deal with them. In a marriage, when there's tension in the marriage, we need to resolve that tension. Do you understand? We don't let it go to excess where we become so angry that I don't want to live with you anymore. I don't love you anymore. Well, how did you ever love me? And you see my point. Solomon's a perfect example of this. Don't be given to excess. The New Testament teaches moderation in all things, and we should recognize it and see it and understand the wisdom of it. But Solomon did not listen to God when it came to what he wanted. And isn't that where the problem is? I'm willing to listen to God in all the things that I'm willing, that I need guidance in, but don't tell me what I should want. Don't tell me not to limit the thing I love. And you see, that pushback becomes a problem. So then my question becomes, how does Solomon then leave such a good position, one that would ask for wisdom and understanding, that understood what God had done for his father, what God has done for me, and now has given me beyond excess? I am rich beyond measure. I mean, there is, if you go and look in Ecclesiastes and start looking at what all he was given, if you think having a house, a nice home, oh, I would love to have a nice home. He doesn't have one. He has so many of them that they don't mean anything anymore. He has lakes, ponds, trees. He's got fruit. He's got women. He's got everything to excess. And with all of that stuff, he is vexed in his spirit because he's not satisfied with who he is. Now, if this is intelligence, may I be a dummy? I don't want to go to that place. And so it's not because he's not intelligent. That wisdom and understanding says that he is intelligent, he is capable, he sees the workings. Remember when it's about the two women that want say that the baby is theirs, both of them say the same. He sees exactly what's going on and says exactly the right thing to determine who the mother is and do what is right. He has understanding, and under those terms, he should understand that this, serve the living God. It's not about an influence from outside sources. He was so powerful, what country is going to come after him? With alliance upon alliance, with all that he needs. You see, no. James 1:13 says, let no one say, when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. And then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when sin is full grown, it brings forth death. And so, wasn't God that did this. God didn't give him the need for excess. No, it was his own lust, his own desire. And he does something to the point where once it got started, he couldn't stop it. Now what I'm wanting to say, and I want us to see, is I want to go back and now look at some of the gods that were talked about. They were this one and that one, and they were an abomination. And I want you to see what he trades God and God's ways for. I want you to hear a little bit of what they are. Ashtoreth is the chief goddess of the Phoenicians. Okay? And so she appears among the Philistines as an idol in whose temple they hung up Saul's armor. So when those things go on, she's identified as Ishtar or Nana, the planetary Venus among the Assyrian gods. Okay, and she is our star, would be the kind of thinking. Her worship was the most licentious and abominable, closely connected with that, okay, of Asherah. Ashtoreth, the goddess Asherah, is the grove, and she is the goddess. The image of the symbol of the goddess is of wood and the forest, that sort of thing, means to be straight, as the straight stem of a tree, fixed and upright. That the ewes of the flock were called Ashtaroth on the principle because they were the ones that propagated. And as in so many false gods and sessions, that when spring comes around and they worship the idea of the blessing of the renewal of growth of all things, animal and vegetable. And so that idea then is grafted into their everyday life. The stone pillar was the symbol of Baal, and a sacred tree was the symbol of Ashtaroth. And the stone making his strength as male, and the tree her fruitfulness. And so this was all about licentiousness and about sexual things. Moloch or Milcom was Ammon's god, who is related to Moab's god Chemosh. He's the fire god and worshipped with human sacrifices, purification, and ordeals by fire, habitually, as other idols were occasionally. And so this sense has been made in movies about Molech, and it's always about fire and those things, and they would sacrifice their children to Moloch. Chemosh was the abomination of Moab, depicted on the coins with a sword, lance, and shield, and two torches at his side. And Ammon, from his close connection with Ammon, also with Moab, also worshipped Chemosh. Okay, and so a black star, according to the Jewish tradition, was his symbol, whether as identical with Mars or Saturn, a black stone was the Arab symbol of him. Now, all of that came from Fawcett's Bible Dictionary, and in Smith's Bible Dictionary, Molech, the fire god, it got more specific. The fire gods appear to have been common to all the Canaanite, Syrian, and Arab tribes who worshiped the destructive element under an outward symbol with the most inhuman rites. According to the Jewish tradition, the image of Molech was of brass, hollow within, and was situated without Jerusalem. His face, that of a calf, and his hand stretched forth like a man who opens his hand to receive something of his neighbor. And they kindled it with fire, and the priest took a baby and put it in the hands of Molech and burned him alive. How can Solomon, the man that has been given wisdom and understanding in all things, turn from the living God and go to these gods? How do you do that? Do you think that Solomon found his way to be deceived by them? Do you think their doctrine of what they do and whatever was given as being the doctrine of Molech or Chemosh or Ashtaroth or any of them, do you think that their doctrine of life and how things are weaned him away from the living God? That had given him his kingdom, had talked to him directly, that told him how things were? Do you think that they could sway him by argumentation? No. His love for foreign wives did this. And so let me kind of give you the idea. Okay, do you think, first of all, that these wives, these thousand wives, I have no idea if you have 1,000 women that would like to have time with you today, how often is your turn? By my counting, at 365 days, I get to see you once every 3 years. Actually, longer than that. And you're saying, now, how would someone that only sees me occasionally have the ability to sway my thinking? And I don't understand that, but it's going to happen. Do you think they criticized him in order to leave God? Your God is not the right God, and you need to come over here and worship my God with me. You think that would have, you think it was the wine that got him? No. I think it would be something more along this line. They would offer that his God, that God is a good God. And that they would also say, but my God's a good God too. Mm-hmm. And they would probably offer prayers before him to their false God. And they would say something that was willing, that sounds like it is a good thing, and wean him that their God listens to those kinds of things. And then they would give Solomon lots of praise and affection and tell him how much they loved him. And then they would ask him eventually for a temple to worship their God. I just would like to be able to worship my God. Could you build me a temple? And then I want you to take that one argument, multiply it by 1,000, and see, can you hold up if that went on day after day after day? Would you please just build me a temple so that I can worship my God? Would you please, please, please? I love you. Mm-hmm. And eventually he yields to that, and he builds that temple. But he's going to have nothing to do with the worship of in that temple. And then the story changes, and don't you see those same wives? Would you come with me just one time, just one time, just one time? And worship with me? See what we do, please? It says that Solomon did not fully follow the Lord. Okay, and so what that means, what does that mean when you don't fully follow the Lord? Does that mean that you entertain ideas from some other source and consider them to the point that you might practice them? Today that might be astrology. Do you read your horoscope and then, you know, that sounds a lot like me. And it does, because it sounds like a lot like everybody. And then when you go and you read those things and then a couple of them come true. Oh, maybe there's something to this. Really? Will we do that? Will we be weaned away from what God has spoken to be taken into something that He's never spoken of, taken into a place where we have no evidence for and that we can't see any cause or effect? Would we do that? And you see where I'm coming from when those things go on. Okay, so that he doesn't fully follow them, because it's evident that when he began to accumulate wives and concubines, he doesn't fully follow the Lord, because I want this many women. I want these many trees, this many buildings, these many horses, this many whatever I want. And I can have all of it because God doesn't withhold anything from me. And I have wisdom and understanding, and no one is like me, and therefore I can be like God. I think his success made him more confident in his own decisions. And then his wisdom is heralded among all the nations. And then he becomes an advisor. God becomes an advisor instead of God and the giver of all things. And so that God's word becomes a suggestion. And if I feel like it, yes. And if I don't, no. Solomon is considered to have forgotten God. And so I want to know, though. You see, how do you live this life of hypocrisy? And there's a real way. I think that as the government was set up, that he set it up when he was following God, and that all that God would have in his government was the way God would have it done. And that's still going on. That I think that the same sort of thing that he took care of the priest and gave them what they needed, and all of that is still going on. That in so many things that he has done that kind of thing, that he has given them what they need, and it's still going on, you see. Do you think that foreigners thought that he follows the living God? Yes. From his early days, yes. But then they see the inconsistency and begin to see the ways that we can manipulate the man and change his mind, even though, and all of it is yes, except not fully. He doesn't fully worship God. And so the punishment is going to be a divided kingdom. The son will lose the bulk of the kingdom. The other 10 tribes will never serve God again. And eventually the last two will become so far gone that they'll be taken into captivity. And then this tiny remnant of what things were will go forward because Solomon went to excess. Are there any lessons for us? I mean, you look at this and you go, wow. All right. And so I'm going to ask you, what are you going to put before the service of God? What takes place and precedent over coming to worship the Lord? What is it that's going to do that? What are we going to do as you choose your careers or as you are in your career? What is going to be the parameters of worship toward God? Is His household and coming to His house and worshiping with the family and being where we need to be for God's sake? Are we going to do that? Or are we going to have some good reason on why I can't do that today? And if I say, and I do, I want you to know I'm a very practical man. We all have times when there's something that can come in the way. I understand that. And yet, what effect does that have on me when I let something get in the way of my service to God? Do you have a desire that comes before God? Maybe to understand those things, you should look at where do you spend your time? Not your work time. We all know where we are when we're at work. I'm talking about your off time. What do you do with your off time? And do you come to the house of the Lord? Or do you go somewhere else? Maybe we should look at what interrupts my worship. You ever had your mind wander while I'm up here? Excuse me, that would be on me. I'm boring, therefore, I understand. Okay, on the other hand, the point of the matter is there something that can interrupt your worship? That some secular thing that can come here and take you away from the thing you came to do? Do you have that ever happen to us? Yes, we've all had it happen to us. Now, what takes me away from here and being with what I would be? And maybe we should look at our hearts, and we do. We've been talking about looking at our hearts and wondering, am I what I should be? Do I fully love the Lord? And I tell you, intelligence will not protect you from distraction. If anything, intelligence may magnify it. Because you have imagination and you have capability in your mind, and you can go there and you can go quickly. And no one knows what goes on behind our eyes, you see. That mostly pure then is not pure. It's only when it comes from God that it is. And so my lack of focus may indicate a heart that's not right before God. Would Solomon have declared that he was right? And I'm going to say for most of his life, absolutely he would say that. Yes, I believe in living God. Look at the evidence. My government runs according to His word. Our religion, according to His word. All that He has given me is because of what He has done. La la, la la, la la, but I have my foreign wives. I've taken fire to my breast. And what has gone on? I'm burned. And he was burned. So that as we go to God and we understand that He made provision for sin, He understands that we make mistakes. What He does not understand is when we don't care what He says. He only asks for one thing. Love me. Show that you love me by the things that you do. Prove it. Love me. He doesn't say, love me and ignore me. He says, love me and show it. So when we start thinking about the things that take us away from God, even in a private way, we need to think heavily about the damage that does. It hurts us. It hurts our confidence. It hurts our relationship. When we miss worship or we fail to pray or we don't have time for study, all those things are understandable, but maybe we should consider our dedication as well. When my excuses exceed my devotion, we should worry. When I know what to do, but I won't do it, I should worry. Trust God and keep His commandments. This is the whole duty of man. I put in parenthesis in my notes, stated by one who knows from the wrong side of the position. The guy that has made the mistake in the worst kind of way that has caused more damage than we can ever imagine understands that in the end, remember God and keep His commandments is the whole duty of man. I hope you believe that. And if so, I hope that you're looking to yourself to prove God every day. And may we do that. If you're not a Christian, become one. Because God says that's how you're going to show me you love me, is by loving my Son and coming to Him. Come to Him. And if you have done something or are involved and need the prayers of this congregation, won't you come as we stand and sing?